everyone, and welcome to episode 561 of the MTG Goldfish Podcast. I'm Seth, probably better known as Saffron Olive, and we have the full crew here this week, kicking things off with the owner of MTG Goldfish, Richard. How are you this fine Monday, Richard?
Good morning, Seth. We finally got to put away Final Fantasy IX. VV is banned, but there are a lot of other bannings, surprise bannings that Lotsy was extra generous this year, so they gave us some extra bannings, so it'll be interesting.
they're in the holiday spirit early, just like all the commercials I saw on TV yesterday. I can't believe they're doing Black Friday sales on November 9th. I'm like, seriously? Like,
they were doing those last week, bro. I got some stuff from Target. You go get some Halloween candy, like, you gotta, like, push past the Christmas decoration. You're like, what's going on? It's not even Thanksgiving yet. Like, what? Why are there Christmas decorations out?
It's so early.
Have you all seen the Mariah Carey's thawing memes? Because it's like her and ice because you're getting ready.
Oh, I haven't, but that sounds pretty good. And that, of course, is our other co-host, Graham. Good morning, Graham. How's it going today?
Good morning. I'm sad to see baby boy go, but I guess, as you remember from Final Fantasy IX, I guess, you know, Vivi's memories will be in the sky now.
I don't know why. Wait, we don't do it like
did
other
Vivi
games.
Die? I don't remember.
Oh, did Vivi die?
What?
Spoilers. I feel like it's been a long enough amount of time that has passed, but I will say that Vivi is an interesting character and very, very good, a very well-written character, and that is all I will say.
I feel like, why don't we do like a Hall of Fame or something instead of bannings? You know how like other games, if they ban a card that's like, oh, we're retiring it to the Hall of Fame, doesn't it make it sound a little bit nicer? Like, you're kind of honoring the card for being so good rather than the negative implications of a banning. Do you think that would help bannings go over a little easier?
It is... Like how, like, if you play like Lorcana or something, instead of destroying a creature, it's like you're saying
you
set the creature
hug your enemy 20 times and you win.
I don't think it does much for me.
Anyway, today we got two big topics. One is we got our long-awaited ban list update. It's November 10th, the day that we've been counting down for a couple of months now, since Wizards kind of telegraphed that they would be banning cards today. So we finally got the ban list update. We're going to talk about that. And then we got more Avatar cards. So we got the rest of Avatar spoilers, and today we're going to talk about some of the best cards in the set that we haven't talked about already. So that's the plan for today. Before we get into it, though, a reminder that we got a couple sponsors today. Our show is brought to you by Card Conduit, the easiest way to sell your Magic cards. If you ever get tired of the hassles of buy listing, you can skip them with Card Conduit. You can use their curated service where you send in as many cards as you want with a buy list value of a dollar or more and pay just a 5% service fee. And if you want to do a bit of work, you can use their sorted service where you list and sort your cards in advance and pay just a 2% fee. Either way, you're going to get a detailed report with the results and a fast payment once your order is processed. And you can even get another 10% off by heading over to cardconduit.com/mtggoldfish. Card Conduit, it's the easiest way to sell your Magic cards. Our show's also brought to you by Heavy Play Advanced Gaming Equipment. The ETB playmat features a unique folding design, allowing it to fit in a standard laptop bag. It's available in a wide variety of colors and also with original art. EquipMag lets you snap all of your gear to your playmat to move between rounds. Not that you're going to need it, because you're going to be sitting at table one all night. So head over to heavyplay.com and use the code MTGOldfish, or use the code MTGOldfish at checkout to save 10% off. So thank you to our sponsors for supporting the show. And let's talk some Magic, and let's start with the ban list update. We just got it as of this recording like an hour ago. Richard, what did they actually change? What got banned?
All right, let me pull out my double-faced card here. It's a long list. Okay, so standard, Vivi, banned, as expected. Additional bannings. Screaming Nemesis, Prof's Eidetic Memory, Pioneer, Heartfire Hero, banned. Legacy, Entomb. What? Is banned. Nadu is banned. Nadu is still legal? Okay, so Nadu and Entomb banned in Legacy. Popper. High Tide is banned. What? Okay, Historic. A bunch of pre-bans coming. Force of Negation, Frantic Search, Mystical Tutor, Entomb, Dark Depths. And then Brawl. Strip Mine, Mana Drain, Chrome Mox, Ancient Tomb, banned. They had to get them all out today, Seth. This was the one day that they got anything, just jam it in here. Yeah. High Tide and Tomb, let's go. Standard.
I mean,
Screaming Nemesis, Prof's Eidetic Memory. So Vivi, I think we all knew was going. And the question was, Cauldron getting hit? Cauldron got a pass, right? Only Vivi. But the other hit from the deck was Proseidetic Memory. Good? Deck is dead, right? Deck is so dead, right?
I mean, the deck in its current form has got to be dead, right? Well, so I guess it depends. The archetype itself is going to be dead. But Krim, I know you're kind of an Izzet believer. Do you think that we're going to end up in a world where an Izzet deck is still the best deck in the format, even without profs and even without Vivi?
So I think I messaged you about that. And my concern was that, like, okay, would they ban Proseidetic Memory? I was worried they were just going to hit Vivi or something like that and let it run free. Because if they just hit Vivi, that doesn't mean anything. Some other Izzet shell would take over. But the fact that they hit Proseidetic Memory, which is, I think, a very big piece of that deck's engine, that is a different story. I do think that they this will definitely hinder any kind of prowess deck that can go on right now, but I don't know what will happen in a couple of months, right? But I do think them missing out on Into the Flood Maw is also a big sideboard. Actually, no, it's just a mainboard, cheap, efficient answer that trades with anything and everything. Like, any of the hate pieces you could have to stop a card in the future, at least for a while it's in standard, is going to get answered for one mana, and all you're going to get is this pointless 1/1 fish that doesn't do anything.
Hey, fish aren't pointless,
I mean,
Krim.
Look, let's be real here. You know, it's like, oh, dang, I almost had you there, but now I got this fish, and it's over, right? Like, I think that card should have also gone with it, right? Though, otherwise, like the tempo that blue decks right now, because every deck in standard has blue, pretty much, and that means they all have the access to Into the Flood Mon. I think that is another card that should go. It seems ridiculous to ask for an unsummon to be banned, but come on, right?
That one I have such a hard time. I go back and forth.
It's Chain of Vapor.
It is Chain of Vapor. But, like, how big of a drop is it really to the next best thing? I guess that's always my question with that. Because I know we have a bunch of, like, 2-mana bounce anything spells. We have 1-mana sorcery speed bounce anything spells. Like, is really the difference, like, being instant speed in 1-mana? Is that so much that it goes from unplayed to bannable? Like, maybe.
That's the most commander player thing I've heard in my life. All right, let's take a look. Lightning Strike versus Lightning Bolt, okay? Spike versus Lightning Bolt, okay? Like, these are, like, that's the difference between a $100 card and, like, a bulk card. So getting both of them is huge, right? Like, if you have a sorcery speed thing, you can't respond to it, right? If you pass on turn one, they do something on turn two, you just passed, right? But with an instant, you can just fire it off, right? So instant is huge. And 1-mana, like, sets, we only play with, like, 12 mana the whole game, okay? Like, it's a huge chunk of mana, right?
Yeah, no, you're not wrong. And I'm not saying the Into the Flood Maw is bad. It's just hard for me to think of it. It's kind of like Attune with Aether. It's so hard for me to think of it as a, like, bannable card, but Attune with Aether was a bannable card, so maybe it needs to be banned. I do think that being able to answer all the hate is kind of problematic, right? Like, that's what allows a lot of these combo-style decks to do their thing so consistently, is they're always just going to have access to Into the Flood Maw, so they can bounce whatever your hate piece is and then just proceed to do their thing and combo off. So I do think it is a negative to the format. I'm hopeful that these bans will be enough to really take the Izzet deck down. I think we can still have Izzet decks. Like, a lot of the lessons seem really powerful from Avatar, and they're, like, in Izzet. We have a lot of existing good cards, right? You still got FOMOs. You still got Quantum Riddlers. There's still a lot of good cards in those colors. But I think that getting Profs and Vivi is going to be enough to knock that deck down quite a bit, which I think is going to be a good thing. Like, they had to get rid of Eevee. I think I would have chosen Profs as card number two. I would have also not minded if they just kept going down the list and hit, like, Quantum Riddler, Into the Flood Maw, any of those
whoa.
I would be Quantum fine Riddler. With that. Quantum Riddler is pretty good. Like, it's ended up being very, very good. I'm glad that they didn't hit Agatha's Soul Cauldron, personally. Maybe that's going to be controversial, but I actually like Agatha's Soul Cauldron, and I thought it was fine in standard. It was fine and standard up until we got Vivi. The thing that scares me about saying that, though, is if you actually read the ban list announcement, Wizards talks a lot in the article about, like, the problem in standard being that there's all these really powerful synergies coming together. And they talk about their, like, testing process and how, like, they couldn't test Proseidetic Memory with Fear of Missing Out that came out 6 months later. And that made Proseidetic Memory from a card they thought was fine to a card that ended up being broken. So there's no way that they could, I don't think, have perfectly tested the next 7 sets coming out to make sure nothing else combos with Agatha's Soul Cauldron. So there is a fear in the back of my head that we're going to end up in this position again with Cauldron, because it is a really unique and really powerful effect when it does its thing. But I don't know, what do you guys think? Should they have hit Soul Cauldron too, just as like a safety valve to make sure we don't end up with another VV popping off?
I mean, I still think that card is absurdly good, right? And oh, that card, if not now, because, you know, again, it only took a single busted activated ability to come out, and then all of a sudden it's the most broken card, right?
Yep.
And it's also hyper efficient because it doubles as not only your win condition, but a piece of graveyard hate. So I don't know. I mean, I think it's inevitable, right? As long as you print cards with activated abilities, this card is always going to be the first thing I'm going to look at. So I think this card, if you're going to take VV, you also take this as well.
When does it rotate?
like forever? January 2027, I think.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah. We're screwed. Like, there should be a sign at Wizards headquarters, like, days without a Cauldron combo. And now we can reset it, but, you know, Avatar, Star Trek, just wait for another Cauldron combo. It's coming. And clearly they can't even test with like the most basic of timelines. So like we will definitely get another Cauldron combo, and maybe it's fun, right? Remember when we first did VV Cauldron? Like, oh yeah, so cool, right? Like, oh, look what I found, right? But it's really broken. They should just get rid of it, because what are they going to do? Not print a good activated ability ever again? Like, it's the birthing pod problem.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's also, if you read the article, the Prof's Identic Memory problem, where they kind of said, like, we took this risk, but we took a very stupid risk. I don't think they said stupid specifically, but they took a stupid risk, because how do you not print card draw in all your future sets? Like, Prof's Identic Memory, it just synergizes with draw a card, and there's no not printing cards that say draw a card for the existence of Standard, so sooner or later it's going to come around. I think activated abilities would be a little easier to design around, but my faith in just, like, with so many years of cards and sets in Standard and being able to like practically test everything, especially with just like the constant changes, right? Of like, oh, now rotation's not going to be next summer, it's going to be in January. Oh, now we'll have an extra year. Like, I don't know how you realistically test all of that, but let's move past Is It Cauldron. I think we all agree is going to be pretty much dead. Cauldron's dead. Is It is going to be way worse. What do you think about the mono red banning? So mono red was the counter to the Cauldron deck, or the closest thing we had to a counter to the Cauldron deck. Losing Screaming Nemesis, does this matter, Krim? Like, Screaming Nemesis is a good card. It's hard for me to imagine, though, that Mono Red just shrivels and dies without Screaming Nemesis, though. Can't you just throw in another one drop or another whatever and still keep on trucking?
Seth, come on. Right? Like, Screaming Nemesis is not just some other guy, right? This is not 2-2 guy, right? This is Screaming Nemi. And I think this card is absurdly good. And I think aggro really needed that, because I think there's a lot of just incidental life gain. Like, when you think about, like, passively just, like, doing whatever
Soul
actions.
Soul Sisters is back.
I mean, look, I think this also means that there's going to be a lot more life gain shenanigans. They want to see more Aeriths and things like that. So I do not think that they should have banned Screaming Nemesis. I mean, maybe just because I think aggro deserves to have a powerhouse of a card. But at the same time, there is every part of me that realizes Screaming Nemesis just hoses so many archetypes just by existing, right? Just knowing that your opponent could play it, it alters my entire play pattern of how I do things, right? If I know a red deck has only played 1 2-drop or something, that means they're loaded with Screaming Nemesis in hand. I think the card is maybe it's fair that it gets like a look at or a nod because it is absurdly powerful and hitting you with that emblem, but I don't know. There's a part of me that wants aggro to still be here. So I believe it or not, as I'm getting my teeth kicked in by aggro, I think it should exist, right? And I don't know what aggro's like best card is after this. And don't say firebending student.
firebending student.
I was just going to say mono red is going to be a house still. I think firebending is probably broken.
Okay.
That is my guess. Without building a deck and playing it or looking at it in any way, but anytime Wizards gives us like some extra resources that can't be utilized fully, it turns out to be false and people can fully utilize it. Right? So I'm just going to assume firebending says on your turn, add that much mana. right? If you untap with this creature. And if you look at it like that, I think it's going to be broken. So I think mono red will still be good, even without the nemesis. And I think we're in for like a ley line future, right? Where you're just like, oh, yeah, let me attack. Bam, 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 you're dead. Like, what was it, turn two? But I had three mana, bro. Like, you know, like... So I think firebending's going to really get some combo decks going. That is my guess. But maybe it all doesn't work. I haven't actually looked at the cards and played it in any way. But imagine like the Teemer Battle Rage decks and stuff have passed, but they just got spotted an extra like 2-3 mana throughout the game.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's kind of interesting because I was going to say the same thing, that I think what happens with red, my guess would be that red is still good. I think losing Screaming Nemesis makes it more hateable, which I think is a positive, that you have like more counterplay to red, with life gain being and blocking theoretically being more counterplay. But I think it might actually push red to be even faster, because I would probably build red as a lane line deck with pump spells and firebending stuff now, rather than playing Screaming Nemesis. Wasn't it a couple like podcasts ago? Someone was like, isn't Screaming Nemesis just too slow now or something? Like, I feel like losing Screaming Nemesis actually speeds up the deck, because you replace it with ley lines and more efficient stuff. So I bet that mono red ends up still good, less consistent, but maybe even faster than it is today would be my bet. If I was going to have to put money on it, that would be my bet on mono red.
I mean,
one more. Oh, go ahead, Grim.
Maybe, but like... I think firebending is a very, very strong mechanic, like having now played with it a little bit, right? But I do think that, I don't know, I don't think there's a lot of discussions about firebending students specifically, and I still wonder, is that going to be a sufficient replacement to, like, you know, Screaming Nemesis or something like that? Because I'll be honest with you, right now I think red's already got a good amount of 2-drops, right? You have the mice, and you've already got Slick Shot Show Off. So, I don't know. I don't know if Firebending Student is exactly what they needed, but maybe Leyline. Maybe.
I also think that just losing Cauldron will change how red is built, because I think all of a sudden... You probably don't play Razorkin Needlehead in your main deck. Or all of a sudden, you probably don't play Magebane Lizard. Like, some of the tech pieces that were mostly to hate on Cauldron, they might move back to the sideboard, might be replaced by other options. So I think we'll see red, like, rebuilt to some extent. I'm curious, though. So those are the two decks that got hit by bannings. Notably, one deck wasn't hit by bannings. It's really a two-deck meta. But if you want to argue that it's a three-deck meta... There's one other deck that's over 10% of the meta right now, and that is Demir Midrange. And that's a deck that we've seen be at the top of the meta in the past, before we got into the last 6-8 months of, you know, is it dominance? We saw Demir Mid with Kaido and all these pieces be really good. You still got Enduring Curiosity. You still got Kaido. You still got the efficient removal. Is there any fear that Demir is going to be too good? Like, do you think it was a mistake? Because I know when I was thinking about what they could ban, Demir was next up on my list, and I thought there was some possibility that you're like, okay, we're going to hit Enduring Curiosity just to make sure that Demir doesn't become, you know, the monster of the format. But what do you think about Demir? Like, is it going to be tier zero moving forward?
So I think the last banning, I think Demir is going to be the default that everybody's going to scramble to.
Yep.
I think it's a very strong deck, but is it the best deck in the format? I think we saw the last banning that it dominated for the first batch of weeks, and then it drifted a little bit, right? It bounced back and forth, and I think I saw some other decks climb to the top, and then eventually VV just kind of like fully took over, right? So yeah. I think you'll see that exact same pattern. I just don't know what the next best deck would be with so many things being hit now. And I don't know if it's going to be an Avatar archetype, but I mean, it'd be wild to see. But yeah, like, I think Demir is going to still be a top deck for a while, because it's the only one that didn't take a hit at all.
Yeah, it's a mid-range deck. You could target it theoretically if it was the only thing, right? So it depends on what the other decks are, and if it gets shielded, right? Like, if it's the only deck in the format, you could probably target it in some way. But it is playing blue, which does have access to some of the best cards we've seen in Standard so far. And you pair it with black removal, and we're getting some upgrade removals in Avatar as well. So it's the default best deck, but I think Wizards is happy if that's the case, right? If your format is black mid-range fest, it's like fine, right? So Yeah, and it lets you play your avatar deck for a couple rounds, or a couple turns before, you know, you realize you had no hope whatsoever, right? As opposed to the other decks where you're already dead, right? So it's fine.
Yeah, you can actually maybe get a shrine on the battlefield before you die. That'll be pretty cool. I mean, really, though, I'm excited about this standard just because Beyond Dimir, nothing else is more than 4% of the meta. So, and yes, I think short-term Dimir will be the deck people flock through. But, like, I really don't know where we're going to end up. Like, we're getting Avatar, plus we have 60% of the meta being banned out from under us. So who knows where exactly we end up. There's a lot of other good decks, Omniscience and Artifacts and so forth. Cynic, so it'll be interesting to see.
Oh, wait, Omniscience is still here? Oh, boy.
Omniscience is still around, yeah. Oh, it's hard mode because you got a Kona into play.
It's because of the stupid Cauldron was saving us. The Cauldron was saving us, and now it's back.
Before we move on to Avatar, what about the rest of this update? Is there anything else that sticks out to you? Pioneer, Legacy, we're not going to go super in-depth on these formats, the Brawl changes, anything notable there?
I'm just going to say, is it legal for them to ban Entomb and High Tide? Like, I don't know anything about these formats, and I don't know how broken these are, but aren't these, like, iconic cards in their formats? Like, you might as well just come out and ban Brainstorm. No, like, are Legacy players asking for an Entomb ban? Like, I feel that's wrong, right? Like, so, I feel it's illegal. You're not allowed to do that. Are Legacy players cheering, or do they feel betrayed? Like,
that is a good question. I have not seen a ton from Legacy players today, so I don't want to speak to how they're feeling because I just haven't seen that much of it. I do know that Legacy players are pretty united around Reanimator being the problem in their format, and Reanimator over the last couple years had been targeted by multiple bannings, and it was still the best deck, and Wizards finally, like, pulled the plug, and it was just like, we're gonna get rid of an iconic card. And they even said that in the announcement, like, we tried really hard to avoid this. It is an iconic card. It feels wrong to ban an iconic card, but, like, we tried everything else, and this is all we know to do to try to stop Reanimator from being the best deck. High Tide is a little different, just because it was always banned in Pauper, but then, like, a year ago, they did this test unbanning because they wanted to see if maybe it could be safe, and now they played with it for a year, and they're like, okay, it actually is not. We were correct to have it banned to begin with. It actually is not safe. So I think it is a little bit different, but yeah, I'm curious to see how Legacy players react to this. I'm excited about the Pioneer banning. Mono Red was just too much in that format. It's funny that Heartfire Hero is banned in multiple formats. When they printed that card, I would have never guessed that would be the card that was banned in multiple formats. I know you've been playing a little bit of Pioneer recently, Krim, and have you been playing Best of One? I don't really play Best of One Pioneer, but I know Wizards specifically called out the prevalence of Mono Red in Best of One Pioneer on Arena is one of the reasons that they needed to actually take action against it, because they said it was, like, more played than the second, third most played decks together or something. It was just some huge metagame percentage in Best of One Pioneer.
I mean, when I logged in, queued up for a bit of Pioneer, I'll tell you what, I completely forgot what cards were still, like that were printed, that should still be in Standard. And when I saw Red with a mouse again, I'm just like, oh, yo, this deck is, like, hyper efficient. like it is a very strong card, and it is very prevalent in Best of One. So, I think it's fair. I saw Red a lot, and I had forgotten that how good some of these decks were.
Yeah, it's funny too, because it's, like, a lot of the Standard deck from, like, a year ago. It looks very much like the Standard deck, but
some of these decks would still be here, if, you know what I mean? Like, if they weren't banned, so.
Yeah, it's true. That is true. Anyway, that's a banless update. Let us know what you think. I'm going to do a video going over it on the main channel, too, so look for that if you want to. But let's talk some Avatar. That's the other big topic for today. So we got the rest of the spoilers. Wednesday's Early Access Day, so check that out if you're interested in some early Avatar action. But today we're going to talk about cards that we haven't discussed already on the podcast that we think are actually relevant for 60-card formats. And let's start with you, Richard. Give us a card.
All right. Mono Red Believer, Firebending Student. One, yes, and a red.
Yes.
1/2 Prowess, Firebending X, where X is this creature's power. Now, we just got a card that was banned that made mana that scaled off of its power. Do you know what card that is? So I envision a world where you're just like giant growth, attack, Giant Growth, Teemer, Battle Rage, something, and you're dead. like as a very simple combo. I'm sure there's more creative things you can do and stuff, but you're going to get a lot of mana off this card if it survives. It doesn't have haste, right? So it needs to survive. But I do think firebending will somehow fit into our new meta. Like just getting free mana, you can't have removal for everything. Something's going to get through and then you're going to have extra mana and there might be a ley line on the battlefield and you might be dead. So firebending student, I think, is the best firebending card, but there's a bunch of other firebending cards that look kind of playable. You can probably put them all together in the same shell, but I'm choosing the student as my representative for firebending.
I feel like the student's the firebending card that is most likely to show up in decks that are not firebending decks. I think putting all the firebending cards together in a deck also like makes sense. We'll see how good it ends up being. But I think you just play this card in mono red. Even if you just look at like the current mono, let's say you just took Screaming Nemesis out since it's banned and put in firebending student. You actually have a lot you can do with making mana during combat. Like, you can pump Burnout Bastionaut, you can pump Hired Claw, you can cast Burst Lightning or Shock or Lightning Strike or Witchstalker's Frenzy. And that's without doing anything around this card. You're not even considering, like, what its ability is. And then if you do want to build around it, I know people have been talking about some, like, turn three combo kill potential where you can, like, cast a pump spell and a double power spell and then go to combat, make a bunch of mana and flashback the double power spell and just win the game. I think the card's really good, too. Krim, you seemed a little skeptical of Firebending Student earlier. Are you not a believer in the Firebending Student?
I think the card is fine. I think it's just this. So to me, this is like what you, how you mentioned Screaming Nemesis. This is just another red guy, right? Or like another red critter, right? Like this is going to be fine. Like sure, there's a lot of things that'll kill you, like in aggro if you pump it 40 times and then double up right with its power. So I think yeah, none of them make mana, but the difference here is that you only ever really needed one or two, right? And then I would die anyway. So I think this is just another red critter that is a step behind Slickshot Showoff. Do I think the card is good in aggro? Yes. In the future, when a few more things rotate, I think this will definitely be an all-star by then if it isn't, you know, by the launch weekend of Avatar. But I think right now there's it's just a contested slot in aggro. And that's my problem here. There's a lot of good two drops in red right now.
That's true.
But yeah, it is a strong card. I don't think it's like completely poo stew or anything, but I just think that right now it's a little contested. And I'm kind of curious to see how red builds its shell after launch.
Okay, I'm gonna go next because my pick is a red two drop that kind of synergizes with this card. So I think we might as well talk about
which
it
now. Which one, Seth?
In Zao the Moonslayer. So Zao the Moonslayer, 2 mana 2/2 legendary human soldier with menace. It says non-basic lands enter tapped, and then you can pay 7, put a conqueror counter on it, and as long as it has a conqueror counter, it's a Magus of the Moon. Non-basic lands are Mountain. So, you know me. I love my Blood Moons. I'm sure I am overrating this card based on the Blood Moon ability, which is a ridiculous amount of mana. But I've been trying to build around this card, and I actually think this is a card that's meant to work with firebending, right? It's an activated ability that you can use during combat, so you can use all that firebending mana to try to turn on your Magus of the Moon and actually get a Blood Moon. But the reason I think this card is good, and Krim's point about there being a lot of good red 2-drops is a concern, but I actually think even if you just forget about the Blood Moon aspect, right? The pay 7, get a Blood Moon. Just a 2-drop menace creature that's a 2/2 that says non-basic lands enter tapped. If you play this in a mono red style deck or even some 2-color decks and you play against a 2-3 color deck with a bunch of dual lands, just
or
make
four
your
color control
play off curve for like as long as it sits on the battlefield is huge, right? I remember playing against Thalia Heretic Cathar that made non-basics enter tapped and just how annoying it is to like have to play off curve the entire game. It really throws off your plans. And this is 2 mana instead of Thalia being 3 mana. So I actually think Zao is really good. I think the Blood Moon effect is a little bit, you know, pie in the sky, not going to come up that often. But I don't think you need that all that often for this card to be good. But I'm curious what you guys think about this one. Krim, where does this fit with the red 2-drops? Is this one playable?
I am glad you brought up that last point there where I think the non-basics just entering tapped is more than enough. Right. I think the Blood Moon counter is funny and flavorful, right?
Yeah.
As that, you know, Zhao does do that in the show, and it does go hard when he's like holding the bag with the fish inside, right? But like, I think that all you need is just the non-basic lands to enter tapped. And I think that that is a strong enough tempo play, especially when you look at decks like Four Color Control. There's lots of things running around right now that aren't using as many basics as they probably should be, outside of Mono Red, of course. And even two-color decks aren't running that as many basics, right? Like, I would say yeah. Dimir maybe has like seven, right? But seven lands, that means you got to have one of those basics. That means now there's even more sequencing to plan ahead against aggro, which helps. I think that helps a lot. I think this card is sweet out of the sideboard. But there is a world where this just is a two-mana do nothing, right? Like, it's like a two-mana, like, oh.
Yeah, if you're running the mono-red mirror or whatever, it's not great. Or mono-white or something.
Actually, like, there's a lot of decks that probably don't care, actually. Hold on. As I think back to this, let me walk that back. I forgot that right now everybody is high on the like four-color control, the three-color control decks and all of that, but a lot of the decks that are aggressive do not care about this, right? Like, they do not care about this. Like, Simic Aggro has a lot of basics in there, and they also have Land of War Elves, so they're ramping and doing all their stuff. I don't know. Maybe this card doesn't matter right now.
What do you think? The card sucks. I think the card sucks.
Okay,
in the best case, you're making your opponent play off curve. Let's say they have all things, but all you did was establish a 2-mana 2-3. So I think they're fine. Right?
It's a 2-2.
Like, I think if you're like gonna play a Grizzly Bear, I can play off curve like some percentage of the future turns. But then there's also many cases where I just have basics for my turn 3-4 and I'm not off curve at all, and you literally just play the bear. And then if I'm really scared of this, I could play more base. I can actually alter my deck building. So yeah,
I wouldn't do that, Richard. I know you. There's no way you're adding more basics.
Okay, this is standard we're talking about, right? We gotta respect. But I feel like you're just playing a bear. Like, if this was a real threat, we could be talking. Remember what Thalia did, right? Thalia taxed your basics, your creatures, right? And then the old Thalia taxed like all your spells. It was a 2-drop with first strike with like, you know, serviceable body. So I don't know. I don't. Sometimes it looks bad, but like if you're like, oh, my mono red opponent just played a bear this turn, thank goodness, right?
Yeah.
I can play my tap land, right? Like, and plus we also have tap lands already. So oftentimes you're sequencing them to play them anyway. So like it doesn't do much. So I'm not high on this.
I can't believe I'm saying this, because if you go back to the early years of the podcast, Butt Menace used to be kind of a meme when they first made that mechanic. But I do think the menace is relevant here, right? Because there is a bit of evasion on your 2-drop, so it should be able to chip in for like at least 2 or 4 points of damage. But yes, it is matchup dependent. I will admit that. And I will admit I probably got some Blood Moon color glasses on when I see this card, because I just get so excited about Blood Mooning people in Standard. But anyway, Krim, I think it's your turn. Give us an avatar card that you think is actually going to be good in Standard.
All right. So I've been bouncing around a little bit, and I actually think that what's that one card? There's a few that I want to talk about. Oh man. Hold on. Let me go up the page here, because I lost it in the
book. Got to scroll through his pages of good avatar cards.
No, okay, not of good avatar cards, just cards I want to play with. Oh, yeah, okay, here we go. My Scornful Striker, 1 and a black, 2/2 first strike. Whenever a player casts a non-creature spell, they lose 2 life. See, now, if we're talking about 2-drop 2/2s, right, this one has first strike. This one does something if you target it. So, like, if I just play a 2-2 bear, like, I think Zhao, like, example, if I just play Zhao, and your opponent just answers it, shocks it, whatever. That's it. That's done. This at least gets me 2 more damage out of it. I think Mono Black has aggression built into it currently, with like, some of, like, the Edge of Eternities, the Warp 2-drop, right? Then you have all the Outlaw Skeletons, and maybe there is some kind of black-based aggro, or maybe even Rakdos. And I think that Mai is just a solid sideboard piece, potentially even in main deckable, because right now the average, like, a lot of spells are, like, maybe, like, 1 to 2 mana, right? And it's nice to know that Mai comes down early enough to tax that, and I don't know. I think it's just a good, honest card that adds to aggression.
I feel like this card would have been maybe like a staple before the bannings, because it seems like it would have really been good hating on the Is It Cauldron deck, like, because that's the deck I think of most at popping off with this. Bowser already playing what, Mage Bane Lizard in red to like kind of hate on that deck. I still think this card's good. We'll see where the meta ends up. It's a little bit worse if it's a very creature heavy meta. It might be more of a sideboard card than a main deck card, but I think the fact that it's like has first strike is nice, and as you said, the fact that it at least gets in two damage even if your opponent targets it with something and kills it right away, I think that might be enough in a black aggro deck. But what do you think on this one, Richard?
I never considered a black aggro deck. I was thinking of it just like a sideboard card in a black deck versus like a storm type deck. I don't know if those exist. I don't know if you want to be playing this. Cauldron is gone. If people are slinging like 10 spells, I guess they're dead. But did this help? Like, they probably just flood mod this and then slung 10 spells at your face. So I don't know. I don't know. I'm not high on it, though. Like, I feel it's a very targeted hate piece. And until our meta shows us that deck, like, it'll sit around and do nothing until it's called upon. And then it'll come up and do something. So I guess it's okay, but I think we're in for a mono red / mid range meta. That would be my guess. And in that case, this doesn't really do anything.
I almost wonder if this is better in older formats, like where you actually have legit like storm style decks. Because I remember playing Kemball, the 3-mana Kemball in Orzhov to hate on storm decks. So it had a very similar effect, but you also gained 2 life when someone cast a spell. And I could imagine this just being a better option, right? Especially in a format like Modern or Pioneer, where you really value efficiency. I feel like this would just be a go-to if you want to hate on like some sort of storm or prowess style. Is it Phoenix style deck that's just looking to chain together Lotus Field combo, just chain together a ton of spells?
This is going to sound kind of wild, but like if control is prominent, I would bring this in out of the sideboard of Dimir midrange.
Would you? So you think it's good enough? So when I think of control, I think, okay, they're just going to kill it. But I guess that's still enough upside. Like you're eating a removal spell, they're taking 2. And if they can't kill it, it's going to actually be really bad for them if somehow they don't have a removal spell.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, they're not aggressive, right? Maybe Lightning Helix, you know, and maybe an inevitable defeat. Like, that's their damage right there. But, this card, for the most part, does force them to have to answer this. Like, even just taking basic game actions from their deck outside of, like, maybe Beza, like, it's gonna cost them 2 life. I think this card is strong. So, I like it. And it's a 2/2 first strike body, so not exactly embarrassing either.
No, it's a good card. Well, let's move back to Richard. Richard, give us another good avatar card.
All right. Earthbending, I feel, is the number 2 mechanic behind firebending. Because Wizards loves to print things that say non-land permanent. And when you earthbend, you're still a land. So you can't flood mod these things. Badger Mole Cub. 1 and a green, 2/2. When this creature enters, earthbend 1. So that's put a +1/+1 counter on a land. It gains haste. And then when it dies or is exiled, you return to the battlefield tapped. So you don't lose a land if it gets Doombladed. When you tap a creature for mana, add an additional green. Llanowar Elf is in the format. You also cast a 2-mana and then made a 1/1 creature that will also tap for 2 mana the next turn. This thing seems nuts. I don't... No, you just made 2 bodies for 2 mana, and you don't have any down. There's no downside here, right? They kill your land, it comes back, you still have a 2/2. They kill this thing, you still have a 1/1 land. If you go elf into this, you can potentially have like two extra mana to do something with as well. So there's a lot of value here, and maybe this will save us from the mono red meta, because you just power your way up. There's no Screaming Nemesis to kill your, make your 5/5 blocker like useless, right? So you can just power up, go into the big stuff, and then go to town.
I mean, is already a deck I would probably try this in, right? The Simic Aggro deck. It plays on the curve, nice, right? And then on top of that, it allows you can like copy this, and then you get to double air like earthbend pretty quick with Jackal, right? The Simic. That Simic deck gets some really explosive starts. So I think this card could go in there.
Oh, yeah, I think this card's insane. I think it can go in the Simic deck. I think it can go in mono green decks. Like, just a It adds 3 power and toughness to the battlefield and 2 bodies, and you get this huge upside with Earthbending or with Mana Dorks, as Richard said. I also think if Earthbending exists as an actual deck, and I think it could, there's some other good Earthbending cards, like Boomy Unleashed, I think is a really powerful 5-drop. This ramps into it pretty quickly. I think if Earthbending ends up being a deck, I think this is going to be the reason why. Like, this card, it's so good.
Oh, yeah.
All right, let's keep moving on. We'll go on to my next pick, and I'm curious what you guys think about this card, because I'm really, really high on this card, and when I talk to people about it, like, half of people are like, I think you're kind of crazy. That's Accumulate Wisdom. Accumulate Wisdom, 2 mana, instant lesson. Says, look at the top 3 cards in your library, put one of those cards in your hand, the rest on the bottom, so literally an anticipate. But if there are 3 or more lessons in your graveyard, you put all the cards in your hand. So a 2-mana draw 3 if you have 3 or more lessons in your graveyard. Otherwise, literal anticipate, which it wasn't that long ago that anticipate was a card that people actually played in decks. Well, maybe it was like 10 years ago now, but there was a time.
It was a long time ago.
When people get you to bed, Grandpa. We're trying to play anticipate in 2025.
But what if your anticipate actually is a 2-mana ancestral recall? That has to be good, right? So we have a lot of good lessons in Standard. We have, actually, if you look through the lessons, it doesn't seem unrealistic to me that you can build a deck where this is actually going to be really powerful. You got Firebending Lesson, which is kind of like a burst lightning for creatures. You have Abandoned Attachments, which is a discard 1, draw 2 for 2. You have Combustion Technique, deals 2 damage for 2 mana, plus the amount of lessons you have in your graveyard, and you exile the creature if it dies. I think there's enough lessons to make this card good, and I think a 2-mana draw 3 is enough to make it worth building around those lessons. But I'm curious, what do you guys think? Is this card just gonna hard flop? Is this just like a limited card, or do you think we'll actually be casting Accumulate Wisdoms in Standard?
I think right now, at least, I don't know what deck you're envisioning this going in. At least when it comes to like control, you have Consult the Stars already. An anticipate, you can't have that much fluff, right? Eventually, you got to have something to draw into that isn't just another draw spell. So I think right now, at least when it comes from the control point of view, I probably don't want this, unless for some odd reason you can come up with more lessons that I would want to throw into my deck.
Yeah, that makes sense. I could see that. But I think you are going to play, you got to play lessons if you're going to play this, right? You're not going to play just by itself, I don't think. I know it kind of calls back to, accumulate knowledge, where, if you cast a bunch of them, eventually you draw a bunch of cards based on how many are in the graveyard. I don't think you play this card that way. I wouldn't play a deck that's just, my only lesson is for Accumulate Wisdoms, because I don't think the odds are going to be good enough there. So I think you do have to be playing more lessons, but I think the other lessons are good enough that it is worth it in some decks. But what do you think, Richard?
So we're going to put a bunch of mediocre cards in our deck to make our mediocre card passable.
<That's>...
there's no lesson you actually want to, if there was an actual lesson Doomblade and you're like, yeah, I want to play this with no synergies, then we could be talking. But you're not going to play Abandoned Attachment. You're not going to pay 2 mana to discard a card and draw 2 without the prophetic memory on the battlefield, okay? there's no way you're doing that. And you're just skipping your turn by doing a 2-mana anticipate. And, it's not, I don't know, man. If you could reliably fire it off on turn 2 or, turn 4, something like that, then it's useful. But I feel you're going to spend so much time setting up, and the rest of the lessons kind of suck.
Right. I'm sure there's a world where you could get it to fire off by turn 3 or 4. It's just you'll be loaded with a bunch of, lessons, right?
So I don't think the lessons are as bad.
You draw 3 cards, but all you did was draw 3 more lessons. Now what do you do?
I think you guys are being the boomers here, and I think you're remembering how bad lessons were last time they were in Standard with Strixhaven,
because
they added a 2-mana tax to all of them, and they were really bad. This time there's not a lesson tax, though. They actually are they're actually pretty efficient this time around.
I wonder, is there a way to firebend your way out of this, right? If you can get 6 extra
out
mana
of it?
Yeah, right? And then you go abandoned attachments, ancestral recall, if you can firebend blue, if you can only just fully transform it into Vivi, right? Then we could get there. Right?
If
and
turn
if you
into
can
Vivi,
pump
it'll
your
be good.
Creatures as you're drawing cards, we could get there, right?
Finally, we might have
been able to play this in the Vivi shell. You know what I mean? Yeah. That may actually have been a thing, right? Because the rest of the shell is so strong, you could do this. But I can't imagine a world where you want to pay two mana to anticipate.
I think it's fine if you can... Okay, so believe it or not, blue and red. Combustion Technique is like the next lesson I'd want to play. That and like Boomerang Basics.
Those are pretty good.
But and again, Boomerang Basics,
it's a sorcery.
Yeah, I looked at it for a second.
And then I'm like, it's a sorcery.
Yeah, I know. Like, but
you
like
guys
that,
hate
that's
sorceries.
That's as much I do usually. That's like the next batch of lessons, and then it's like the rampant growth, right? So when I look at those, and if I ran eight copies, right, four copies of this anticipate, and then four copies of any of these lessons, and having eight of those, I still don't know how consistent my deck is firing off to getting all three, but I also don't think any other lesson is good enough to also play.
I mean, what about
load up?
Rampant Growth. You have the Rampant Growth in Harrow too. If you win the green, so you get Rampant Growth in Harrow. Then you have this. Then you have the red removal, which I actually think if you're playing lessons, isn't Combustion Technique pretty good? If you're like playing multiple other lessons, then I think it's probably like pretty reasonable. And I think that'd be enough. If you had like 16 lessons as your spell package, I think your Ancestral Recalling consistently enough to make it worth it. No.
So if your opponent plays a 2-mana 3/3 and you have a Combustion Technique, you just dead, right? Like, you can't remove it on curve. You got to somehow get another lesson off, and then, like, you've just thrown your whole game away to potentially, you know, draw two extra cards in the future. Like, I don't think you can play Combustion Technique. If it was 1 mana, you might be talking, but 2 mana? That only does 2 damage before you power it up.
Yeah.
You just save a Wayfinder or something, right?
Firebending lesson, 1 mana for 2 damage to a creature, or you can kick it for 5 total mana for 5 damage to a creature.
I can see that.
But
you just play Burst Lightning, though, no?
Yeah, like Burst Lightning.
Well, not if you
want to
draw
3
cards with Accumulate Wisdom. All right. We'll have to wait and see on that one, but we got to get on to another card. We're stalling out too much with this one. Krim, give us a good card.
Okay. Probably then going into the next card. So I like Airbending, right? I don't know, is it just me that loves airbending here? Because I think that there's a lot to do with airbending when it comes to, like, warp cards, like, example, the Quantum Riddler and stuff like that. So what if you play cards like Airbender Ascension? Okay, this is a double because I want to bring up two cards, but Airbender Ascension, when this enters, airbend up to one target creature, right? We talked about that, I think, last week, actually. Mm-hmm. So I think I'll go ahead and bring up Aang, Swift Savior, which is... When Aang enters, airbend up to one other target spell or creature, has flash flying, and waterbend 8, it flips over to being Aang and Law, Ocean's Fury, which is reach, trample, Aang and Law attacks, put a 1/1 counter on each tapped creature you control. But I guarantee you most of the time you will not see that side. But the main thing here is you get a Spell Queller in Standard. But is Spell Queller, how much does Spell Queller being legendary hurt it? Right, which again, the tempo play of having multiple spell quellers out and just beating down with a 2/3 flyer was more than enough, right? But you could do it in multiples, whereas this is only one of. And on top of that, there was recently a blue white aggro deck that was kind of popping off. So now blue white aggro got a new toy. I don't know if it being legendary really hurts that much, because the difference here is that Spellqueller puts the spell underneath it and then makes it so that, you know, okay, if it goes away, they get it again. This just straight up sends it to exile. They got to just pay the 2 again, right? So I personally don't think the legendary part of it will matter as much. The only difference is you can't assemble an army of Aang Swift Saviors.
I think it's fine as a legend. This card... When I first read it, I thought it was one of the best cards in the entire set. And I still think it's one of the best cards in the set. But I do wonder a little bit compared to, like, Spellqueller, the spell's locked under it. We have Aven Interrupter in Standard where you plop the card, but then
I
they have to wait a turn to actually recast it. My only concern is using this purely defensively on your opponent's stuff, is I feel like there are going to be times in the late game where you, like, cast this and airbend their spell, and they're just like, all right, 2 more mana, just recast it. And you're like, eh. But you get all this upside that you can hit a creature on the battlefield. You can airbend your own creatures as, like, a weird restoration angel. So I think when you add in all the flexibility, it's still really good. I think the airbending your opponent's thing off the stack, though, like, it's going to be a really solid tempo play early, but I think it loses some of its value as the game goes along.
That's what you think until, again, you know, like you just mentioned, Aven Interrupter, I love that card, Avon Interrupter. And I think
they work
that
really well
a,
together.
They work very nicely together. I don't know, man. I don't know. I still believe in Interrupter, and I believe this card as well.
Richard?
I was on the fence about this. I was thinking whether I should bring it up, and then you guys would call me boomers with Spellcrawler. But I think Krim is right, though. I think it's good because of the rest of the blue cards, right? Because you can, like, hold up three mana, they play something, Aang, and then untap Enduring Curiosity or something, hit them, draw a card back, bounce this back with Kaido or something. Like, you can do a bunch of things. And I do think it's a legit clock to end the game. Like, your opponent can't tap out because you can just water bend eight and then smack them for, like, you know, 8-9 in the air, right? Because it's a 5-5, it attacks for a 6-6. If you have a Siren Storm Tamer or whatever, right, that's two more damage. Like, you can threaten the water bend with, like, four or five real mana and, like, some tokens or some other, you know, random stuff. I think it's legit. And then late game, you can just use it to, like, fog and it, like, you know, someone attacks you, you, like, you know, you airbend it out. They can cast it again, but, you know, you fog the attack, right? Or you can clear blockers. You can do all kinds of weird things. So I think it's actually more versatile than Spellqueller. But yes. Again, it's still just a 2-3 clock, though. I'm like, a 2-3 flyer. This, we aren't in the days of Delver anymore. Like, this is this going to really finish the game, right? Like, I don't know, right? Like, maybe this is all for naught, right?
I do think it is funny that we're going to, like, go okay, boomer, to Seth and his anticipate and then also ride the high of Spellqueller in the same episode.
Like, two mana evasion. We're going to finish the game with it. I'm like, whoa.
Brother, don't be ridiculous with anticipate, but also Spellqueller. Oh, there's actually merit to this, though. And maybe I'm harsh on the waterbend side, but I actually think now that I'm waking up and having all the cards hit me, right, because I just recently played the blue-white aggro deck and all of that, Waterbend is so nice because you can use tokens to tap it. And everything in blue-white aggro creates so many game pieces that you can waterbend with. Spyglass Siren, Novice Inspector. That's already four pieces.
Oh, Krim, we are like one step away from you becoming a Spirit Water Revival believer. We're so close. We are so close.
Well, you know, that card doesn't do it up. I'll be honest with you.
No, I think Aang's really good. And I wasn't sure when you brought up airbending, if you're going with that, or I actually think Appa, Steadfast Guardian, is also a pretty sweet airbend card. So I think we could see an airbending deck, but let's see if we can do one more round. Back to you, Richard. Give us one more avatar card.
Let's go full boomer. Can we still play tokens in 2025? United Front. X, white, white. Create X, 1/1 white ally creature tokens. Then put a +1/+1 counter on each creature you control. There are some raise the alarm type cards in Standard. There's some in Avatar, right? Like 2-mana 1/1s. This can just be used as like a 2-mana pump your team for attack. Or late game, you cast it for 5-6. You make a bunch of 2/2s and you try to win the game. I don't know if this is happening. You might be dead already, right? If people are reanimating Omniscience, this is not happening, right? But if you're playing against, like, a Dimir mid-range type deck and they're trying to one-for-one you, like, tokens. Tokens is the answer. And this acts as, like, an honor of the peer or whatever for, you know, in a pinch if you need, right? Like, in the early game, it's still something. And a three mana, you make a 2/2 and you put counters on your team. Like, if you have a big enough team, that's still, like, not bad, right? So I think United Front can see play.
I hope this card is good. I think if this card is good in Standard, we're probably in a Standard that's going at a pace that I would enjoy. I do worry a little bit about being a sorcery. I feel like our best mass token producers tend to be like instant speed style, but you get the upside of this making allies, which there are a ridiculous amount of allies in this set to the point where I don't think it's impossible there's an ally deck. And just the way allies work, where you have stuff that's like granting abilities to all allies or triggering when allies come into play, if there's an ally deck, I think this goes up even more in value. So I think there's a chance this card is good, definitely in allies if allies a thing, but just as a generic finish, I don't know. Do you think this card at sorcery speed is good enough, Krim?
I mean, I thought I was being picky about sorcery here. Okay. I do think that I need this to be instant. Right? In this Standard, like, right, there's no world where I would play this. I would rather just have whatever, not March of the Multitudes, Secure the Wastes or something like that, right? Because Secure the Wastes was instant speed. I guess March of Multitudes was as well. And you could just remove the 1-1 counter clause, right? You just give me a way to instant speed spawn ally tokens. I don't know. I don't like this that much, but I worry about sorcery speed.
You 1 mana, 1 drop, 2 mana, play 2 more 1s, 3 mana, +1/+1 on your whole team, push for 6, make another 2/2, and then you get wrath and then call it a day, right? Like, the problem is, like, our wraths are so efficient now. But if you ignore
you might
that,
be right.
If you, you ignore right. that, you're supposed to play this on curve. Like, you're supposed to use the pumping effect, I think. And then in a pinch in the late game, you can, like, you know, X5, 6 or whatever. But you're supposed to do this on curve, pump the team, and, like, go, right? That's the point, I think.
Yeah.
What's the card Phil always plays in Commander that's, like, board Caretaker protection talent? Plus mass oh. token producer? Grand Crescendo? Is that the one that's, like, you can cast it for 2 mana to protect your board, or you can dump X? It kind of reminds me of that to some extent. And that card actually, like, the flexibility makes
speed.
It overperform. It is an instant. But maybe I'm underestimating just 2 mana, put a counter on all your stuff. Like, maybe that's actually, like, good enough to make it worth it. I was thinking you got to dump all your mana into it. But if we're thinking of it as, like, you're just going to cast it at whatever point on the curve you're at and it's going to be worth it, I could see that.
If this had, like, maybe, I don't know, waterbend or, I don't know, anything at all, and then, like,
firebending,
like,
airbending.
I would take a bending of some sort, right? But it not being instant speed does hurt it in standard for me, so.
All right, I'm gonna go with my last pick, and then we're going to wrap up with you, Krim. My last pick, I feel like, I hope this card is good. The Earth King. I'm going to go with the green card, the Earth King. So the Earth King is a 4-mana 2/2. But when it enters, it makes Bosco a 4/4 green bear creature token. And then it says whenever one or more creatures you control with power 4 or greater attack, search your library for that many basic lands, put them on the battlefield tapped, and then shuffle. A nice little bonus. I don't think you're realistically in standard going to be, like, playing this as a ridiculous ramp card. But I feel like the Earth King, and also Boomy Unleashed, just kind of similar. These, like, 4 and 5 drops that come along with a relatively good-sized token, I feel like those are pretty decent cards, right? In a removal heavy format where people are killing your stuff, it gives you 2 bodies, so even if one dies, you can still get the other one. It's pretty cute with stuff like airbending and blink effects, where you can potentially recast it on the cheap and make another bear out of it because the bear's not legendary, and then maybe you do a little bit of ramping too. So I don't know, cards that make 2 cards are usually pretty good, right? So what about the Earth King?
I mean,
and the crowd was silent.
I want to say nice things today, Seth.
You're not a believer in Bosco?
I love Bosco. I think Bosco's adorable. I love the token and all that. But the Earth King, I think, first off, is there a mono green aggro deck now, right? And will that come from this set? I think Badger Mole is interesting.
It is kind of competing with the Boroid, I guess, in the 4-drop slot. Yeah. That is a bit of a concern.
Ouroboroid is the 4-drop, right? And, like, I think if I wanted to, wouldn't I just play Lizard? Because Lizard, even though not necessarily spawning a token, could turn one of my poopers into an actual, like, 5/5, right? Or is it a 4/4 Lizard? I can't. It is a 4/4 Lizard, yeah. See, like, so, and it's a 4/4 body. But the trade-off is that this one allows me to ramp when I attack with power 4 or greater. So, but I don't know. I am not there when it comes to standard Earth King. You want to talk about Commander Earth King? Sign me up. That's adorable. I love Bosco. Right? I'm here for that.
But 2 bodies.
Oh, Richard. 2 bodies is good.
2 bodies is good.
Say some nice things about the Earth King.
The bear is cute. It's going to be cute as it gets bounced back by Flood Maw. Into your head, yeah, and then just go to the shadow realm.
You can trade the bear for a fish.
So as a generic card, I think it sucks because what is this, like, Huntmaster? Like, come on, it's 2025,
yeah.
Right? Like, what are you gonna do with the 4/4 to 2/2 on 4 mana? The ramp doesn't help because if you're an actual, like, ramp deck, you need more reliable ramp. And then if you're not a ramp deck, what are you gonna do with all this mana? Like, is there a good? You just gonna play, like, the Earthbend land? Like, I don't know what you're gonna do with all this mana. I do see potential, although probably not, in, like, a Tifa combo deck as another way to combo, but it's, like, 4 mana. They're like, who has time and mana for this? But if you have a Tifa on the battlefield and you do this, you just win the game.
Instant speed landfall,
But, you know, this was 4 mana, and then, you can't even, like, use your things. I don't know, right? I don't see how you would play this set. This is, like, remember we asked, like, if there was a vanilla creature, how big would it be? And my answer would not be a 4-mana 6/6 across 2 bodies. That would not be my answer as to whether it's playable or not.
It's not technically vanilla. Like, it has an enters trigger, it has a ram trigger.
So you play a 3-mana 5/5, okay? And then you do that. You attack. You play this, you attack, and you can get 1 land. It's not even like land equal to the power, right?
Deck
it's just
thinning,
one land.
Deck thinning. You get some deck thinning.
It's just, I don't see
it.
I don't see
also,
it.
Also, I will. Before we get to Kai, I gotta say, after watching the show, the Earth King himself is the most like 0/1 creature I've ever seen. I don't know how he managed to come out of this as a 2/2 because that dude is straight up a 0/1. But Krim, what do you got for your last pick?
Not after he explores Seth, right? When he sees the world outside, you know, then he's a 1/2. Okay,
yeah, he's growing.
All right, so if you were to ask me cards that I think would get played or cards I want to play, these are two separate questions, right? Mm-hmm. The two cards I'm about to name are both probably not going to get played, but I want to play them. And Secret of Bloodbending is a card that I want to play with Eluge so bad. You know I want to pair this with Eluge and gain control of combat, but... Okay, so that's my honorable mention there. But the one, I think the problem here is we should have never gave Seth crap for OK Boomer cards. Because I'm going to go and bring up Tiger Seal.
Boomer.
Like, I know this is crazy, dude. I had to ask this question, okay? Wild Nacatl. How good is that card, right? But Tiger Seal is a blue 3/3 vigilance. At the beginning of your upkeep, tap this creature. Whenever you draw your second card each turn, untap this creature. Is this card sick?
Is a cool design. It is cool.
Like, it is a one-drop 3/3. If everything in this current meta, right, is, like, for the most part, a shock, it dodges that. Okay, I mean, it eats the same hard removal spells, but the main thing here is that you can definitely draw a second card each turn. It is not hard to untap this. And it has vigilance, so it is blocking. And I don't know. It's a solid 1-mana 3/3. Is this not Wild Nacatl, but, like, in blue? Brother, come on!
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I guess it kind of is. So, because it has vigilance, you only need to draw a second card once to get it untapped?
Because at the beginning of your next upkeep, you tap it again.
Oh, you gotta tap. No, yeah, that sucks, right? Like, how are you gonna do it?
You need to consistently.
How are you gonna consistently keep it untapped?
I guess, you know what? That's the thing. I'm like, I need to sit down and plan this out because I don't think this card, it's a 1-mana 3/3,
okay,
right?
So much work for a 3-mana, a 3/3 chump. Like, it chumped all day, right? No evasion.
Actually, I think you could build it. Okay, so I don't think this is a card you can put in every deck, because I think it's going to be tapped too often.
100%, no.
But I think you could build a deck around it. Now I'm thinking about it. You could play, like, an Izzet deck with, like, Fear of Missing Out. You have Kiora. You have Tursa Light Shadow. Like, you could play a bunch of good cards that just incidentally let you draw or loot when they enter the battlefield. And then this would just be, like, Wild Nacatl in your deck, right? So I think you could actually build a deck where this card would be good. I don't know how good that deck will be, but I think you build a deck where it would be good.
Okay, first off, let's not act like, you know, right now they didn't just have a BNR that talked about how easy it is to draw cards, okay? So let's be real here for a second, right? It's not like I'm asking for Christmas land here. I think this card is playable. I mean, we're starting to see Duelist of the Mind get played as well. Of course, you know, that on attack may be a little bit too late because you do need to untap it before you attack. But I think that there's a definite way you can draw tons of cards, right? I mean, maybe Agatha or losing Prof's Eidetic Memory might hurt this card a little bit, but I don't know. This is a 1-mana 3/3. It's got to be good.
So, okay, let me set aside. Let's say you untap it consistently. Is it good then? Like, is
yeah.
a 1-mana 3/3 still
yeah,
good in 2025? Actually,
right?
Now I'm thinking about that. I'm like, I mean,
wait.
I guess Wild Nacatl would be good, right? It would have to be good.
Yeah, I
it's red.
Come on.
without like having to set. Remember, because you are drawing cards, you're not applying as much pressure as you should be, right? So it's not as good. And you got to remember all the scuffed draws where like you don't, like the minute you don't draw on curve, you miss an attack, and this might as well have been a 1-1 flyer. Like, that's the amount of damage you got in, right? Like, if you miss one attack anywhere, like, it was as if you were attacking with a 1-1 flying this whole game, right? So I don't think you can be consistent enough. But, like, Enduring Curiosity... Oh, no, wait, that's post-combat. Enduring Curiosity blocks this, though. 3-4 just stonewalls this. I don't...
Okay.
I think you just want the 2-2 flyer.
There's the 1-1 flyer. Okay, Sleep Cursed Fae exists. Right?
Okay.
In this standard. And that's another 1-mana 3-3. It has ward 2, so it does protect itself. It's kind of nice because of that. Right? Ooh. But the stun counters have made it a little rough. Right? So this doesn't have a stun counter, although I guess you could kind of say it has a pseudo-stun counter forever. I think this is better than the Sleep Cursed Fae, at least. And then with that, I think there's a lot of ways you could definitely draw two and that, or draw a second card. And I guess... Okay, to go back to that, Seth, do you think, just alone, or ignore the drawback here, is a 1-mana 3-3 good? And I think it is.
I think it's, I think...
You don't think a 1-mana 3-3 is good?
I think it's still gotta be, right? It's still gotta be good. I do, like, I think it's slowly getting worse, though, because I feel like one thing that happens a lot now is we get 3-drop 2-4s, which in the past... Those were like 2-3s a lot of the time. So I feel like it gets a 3-3s get stonewalled more now than they used to in the past. But I still imagine it has to be good. Blue is kind of a weird color combination for being super aggro. Like, where do you play it? Like Dimir? Like, I think of Izzet. I think you could build a good Izzet deck around this. Maybe this is the solution for all the bannings we have. You can even still play Cauldron, and then you get the Sleep Curse Fae under the Cauldron, and then you can use that to untap the Tiger Seal. Yeah, I think we're figuring it out.
Brother, here it is. Boom. Okay, that does work. That's a lot more work than I'd want to do. But, like, what if mono blue? Okay, what if mono blue? You have Flood Pits Drowner, you have this, you've got Hydro Man, and then you go and play like Eluge, and then you have, you know, Blood Bending.
But there, how am I drawing world... 2 in that deck? That's the issue.
But that's just like the creatures, right? These are the creatures,
right?
You play.
Oh, right. Okay.
Right, like these solid bodies. And yeah, these are all very solid bodies, and then you just get the right draw engine in there, and then you start working it. I don't know. Hey. I kind of like that. And I'm just going to say that it auto-taps itself. Why? Don't mind me, because we've already seen, this is a corner pocket case, but it does come up more often than you think. It is a Spider Sense. You get to play Spider Sense and bounce it back, right? Because a lot of blue tempo decks are using that to like...
It's a web combo. It's in, it naturally taps itself. I can in web whenever I want to.
In web. Oh my goodness. Like, web slinging.
Web slinging.
But Spider Sense, right? Spider Sense is a played spell. That's not like an unplayable spell that no one plays, right? That is a real card. And I don't know. It has its corner like applications. I like it. I think 1-mana 3-3 has to be good, right? At some point, one of these 1-mana 3-3s.
You play Azorius? And then there's like the 2 web-slinging 3-3s for 1 mana. So you can just play all 1-mana 3-3s. You play the Tiger Seal. It taps. Yes. You web-sling it back. Play another 1-mana 3-3.
You don't need to web-sling. I'm just saying that you could. But the main thing is a 1-mana 3-3 has to be good. That's the point here.
Hey, I remember playing Phantasmal Bear, just a blue 1-mana 2-2, and that card was actually good back in that day. So if we're going to go with the Boomer comparisons, I think the card, it's got to be good, right? Phantasmal Bear, Wild Mikado.
It's also not legendary, so you can actually stack these bad boys up. Imagine you go turn 1, Tiger Seal. Turn 2, Tiger Seal, Tiger Seal. Turn 3, draw a card, smack you for 9.
Turn 3, get swept off the board.
Or turn 3, not draw a card. You just have 9 tap power.
Turn 3,
cry.
Not draw a card. And then all you have is 4 lands, 3 Tiger Seals. That's your hand. You're like, okay, bro.
I will say losing Prof's eidetic memory does hurt a little
bit. It does hurt a smidge.
It would have been a 4-4. Oh.
Actually, if you had Prof's, if that card was there, I think we could be actually talking. I think it might actually be legit.
Anyway, I think that's all we have time for today. But there was one super quick fishmail because it applies to this conversation. Let me see if I can find it real quick. It was an email one. Oh, all right. I can't find the actual question, but the question, I'm going to paraphrase. I'm sorry I'm not giving you a shout out here, whoever submitted this question. But it was basically, why do you end the podcast at an hour? Why don't you always say, oh, we got to wrap up now because it's been an hour, or we're running long. Why do you actually cut it off at an hour? And I think the biggest answer is we actually do the Commander Clash podcast right after. So everyone's waiting around for us to do the next podcast if we run super long. But any other answers to that fish mail that I can't find at the moment?
Well, the answer would be that if we didn't kind of like aim for an hour, I think I would probably spend another hour trying to convince you that this 3-3 might be good.
Yeah, I'm so definitely thankful that we have a cap.
So
yes.
We need to escape from all the bad takes.
Yeah.
1 hour's the limit. Yeah. This is where it all starts falling apart.
Yeah. You can only have bad takes for a duration of time before it becomes too much.
Anyway. That's our pseudo fish mail for this week. We'll do a real one next week. Richard, how do they send in fish mails for next cast?
All right. Hit us up at MTG Goldfish with the hashtag MTGFishmail, and we'll get to your questions on air.
And I believe that brings us to the end of episode 561 of the MTG Goldfish podcast. So, Richard Krim, thanks for hanging out. Thanks to everyone for listening. Thanks to our sponsors for supporting the show. And we'll be back next week to talk about Avatar Early Access and whatever else goes on in the world of Magic. So until then, have an amazing week, everyone. And this is a crew signing out.